in this is small, or has small lawyers. No, we've got a few. What are you going to do? Scare the shit out of them is my current plan. Chapter 19. I flew down from Boston today, and my colleague here drove up from Washington, D.C., Mr. Ortiz, Van said, leaning forward on the Philadelphia Police Interrogation Room table. I tell you this so you can appreciate how magnificently fucked you are, that you have federal agents coming from across the Eastern Seaboard to talk to you. Pedro Ortiz, cousin of Alton Ortiz, looked as deeply confused as only someone who had spent the night in the city jail on charges he didn't comprehend could. Sitting next to him was his attorney, a young kid in a bad suit who was clearly out of his element. And you, Van said, turning her attention to him. Public defender or junior associate? I happen to, the I assumed public defender began, but Van cut him off and then pointed to him. This one is not good enough for the shit you're in right now, Van said to Pedro. I went to Penn, the lawyer said defensively. Do you know what shit you're in right now? Van asked Pedro, ignoring the lawyer. Pedro looked at Van, and then me, and then his lawyer. When I was arrested, they said arson, but... Tell him what else he's won, Agent Shane, Van said to me. So there's the arson charge, which you already know about, I said. Also, destruction of property, multiple charges, attempted murder, multiple charges, voluntary and involuntary manslaughter, also multiple charges, conspiracy to commit arson, conspiracy to commit murder, and animal cruelty. Animal cruelty? Pedro said. There was a cat in that apartment when you set it on fire, Van said. I didn't know about any cat, Pedro said. His lawyer groaned and slid down a little in his chair. Basically a whole raft of local, state, and federal charges that you'll be charged with. Not to mention the civil suits that will be filed by the landlord and every single tenant you burned out of a home. Do you have insurance, Mr. Ortiz? Not that much, he said. I didn't think so. So, Van said, and folded her hands together on the table. You can talk to us, or take your chances with Clarence Darrow over here. But before you answer, let me be honest with you. We don't want you. We don't even want your cousin, who is why you're here in the first place. So if you work with us and tell us useful things, we'll work with you. But if you don't, we don't want you, but we'll be happy to take you, I finished. It'll give closure to the people you burned out of their homes. Give me a second with my client, the lawyer said, and then leaned over to whisper in Pedro's ear. Pedro listened for a few seconds, then screwed up his face and looked at his lawyer. No shit, genius, he said, and then turned to Van. This one here thinks I should make a deal with you. He's very wise, Van said. I want immunity for my client, the lawyer said. I'm sure you do, Van looked to Pedro. Let's hear what you got. Couple years back, Alton tells me that he's got a friend who's looking for an apartment, Pedro said. Nothing fancy or too expensive, just someplace he can use as an office. He knows I do a lot of electrical work for landlords and property managers, so I might know someplace and maybe get him a good deal. So I find him that place on Natrona. It's only an okay building, but the area is gentrifying. It's fine. Alton slips me $100 in appreciation, and that's it. I see him sometimes at family things. Then, about 2 months ago, he comes back to me and wants a favor. Turns out his friend is using the apartment to screw around, and the wife wants to come in and take pictures and gather evidence for the divorce proceeding. And I say, okay, so what does that have to do with me? And he asks me to cut the power to the apartment so she can get in. So I ask what's wrong with the goddamn key, and he says the dude doesn't know his wife knows about the apartment, so it has to be a secret, and the dude has all sorts of security because he has expensive threeps in there. And then Alton offers me a bribe. How much? Van asked. $2,000. So, okay, I have a kid in college. Fine. He tells me what day his girlfriend wants to get into the apartment, and then the next time I'm checking the system, I program in a routine that turns off the power in the apartment for 30 minutes. It's a kludge, and I have to turn off some safeguards for the building to make it work, but it's for 30 minutes, so I don't think it's a big deal. I tell Alton the time and set a note for myself to revert the system the next time I go to run maintenance to purge out the kludge. The next thing I know, the place is burned down. What do you think happened? Van asked.
I don't know, Pedro said.
The electrical system was old, and even with the software to manage it, there were always problems and shorts. Someone probably just plugged one too many things into an old shitty power strip.
You'll affirm all of this in writing.
Give me a pen. Whatever this is, I don't want any part of it. I love my cousin, but this is out of do-for-family territory.
This was all through your cousin, Van asked. No one else involved.
Not with me, Pedro said.
Did you know Dwayne Chapman at all? I asked.
The guy who rented the apartment? No, but I didn't know any of the renters that well. I'm not on site all the time. I contract out for a lot of buildings. Occasionally, I go into the apartments if I have to do work. The manager lets me in if they're not home. I was never in that guy's apartment after the first week he rented it, and he needed the high-capacity outlets for his street pads.
How about Marla Chapman?
No, I never met her.
You called her Alton's girlfriend, Van said.
Yeah.
Why'd you do that?
Because she was.
Are you sure?
That's what he told me when I asked why he gave a shit.
And you're sure they're sexually engaged with each other?
I don't have pictures, Pedro said, but yeah, I'm sure.
Ma'am, I don't want to be sexist, but the only reason a man sells out his friend is if he's screwing his wife.
Did you go to Penn Law? Van asked the next lawyer we saw 2 hours later, this one in another part of town, in a hotel conference room the NAHL rented for the occasion.
No, I went to Georgetown, said the lawyer, who had introduced herself as Keshia Sanborn.
Why do you ask?
No particular reason, Van said. She turned to Alton Ortiz, who sat there in his suit.
And you're sure that you want to be represented by the NAHL and Ms. Sanborn here?
Yes, Ortiz said, and then looked over to Sanborn, confused.
Is there some reason you're choosing to start this entirely voluntary session by attacking me, Agent Van? Sanborn asked. Because I have to say that it doesn't incline me to allow my client to continue.
I just want to make sure Mr. Ortiz is aware that at some point his interests and the interests of the NAHL diverge. And while it's all very well that you've taken his case pro bono out of the goodness of your heart, Ms. Sanborn, I think it's fair for Mr. Ortiz to ask himself how much of the advice he gets from you is for his benefit and how much is for your usual employer.
What does that mean? Ortiz asked.
It means we know about you and Marla Chapman, I said. Ortiz looked shocked.
Your cousin told us all about it, Mr. Ortiz, Van said. Told us how Marla Chapman decided that if her husband was seeing people on the side, it was only fair that she was extended the same privileges.
I pushed forward a manila folder to Sanborn. Texts and messages between Mr. Ortiz and Marla Chapman, I said. We got a warrant for her phone as part of the investigation into her death. I turned to Ortiz.
My condolences to you, Mr. Ortiz.
Thank you, Ortiz said in a dazed tone of voice.
Here's the thing, Mr. Ortiz, Van said, stepping on my condolences. We know you and Marla Chapman were an item. We have a sworn affidavit from your cousin attesting that you approached him to fiddle with the wiring in Dwayne Chapman's love nest, which led to the entire building burning down.
At this, I slid another folder over to Sanborn with Pedro Ortiz's statement inside.
And you ran from us when we came to talk to you the other day, which we don't usually consider the action of someone with a clear conscience.
What are you accusing my client of, Agent Van? Sanborn asked.
It's not what I'm accusing him of that's important here. It's what your interest is here, Ms. Sanborn.
Van looked at Sanborn.
Yours and the NAHL's, but since you've asked, we're going to accuse your client of first-degree murder. He had the means, motive, and opportunity to kill Dwayne Chapman, and there's evidence to suggest he'd been planning this for a while, for as long as he and Marla Chapman were an item, at the very least.
Van turned her attention back to Ortiz.
You decided you'd had enough of Chapman, and you didn't want to have to keep sneaking around with Marla. You doped a supplement IV with something you thought could get past the usual sorts of tests, he had his seizure and died, and you and Marla Chapman lived comfortably ever after on the insurance and league benefits. And you might have gotten away with it, too, if it weren't for the apartment fire and your cousin giving you up.
Ortiz gaped.
That's nuts, he said finally.
We're happy to hear an alternate theory of the case, I said.
I didn't dope that supplement bag. Test it yourself.
We can't, I said. The lab contaminated their test sample. It's unusable for legal purposes.
There was an autopsy,
Ortiz protested. Nothing conclusive at this point.
This was true as far as it went.
So in fact you have nothing on Mr. Ortiz, Sanborn said.
We have his cousin's testimony and his tweet, and, as I said before, means, motive, and opportunity.
All of which will be destroyed in court if you're stupid enough to charge my client.
Possibly, Van said, if you take it to court at all. She turned to Ortiz.
See, this is where I make the point that I think the NAHL, Ms. Sanborn's boss, will be delighted to have you make a plea bargain, Mr. Ortiz. When we're gone, she's going to make the case to you, the correct case, that if this goes to trial, it's going to be essentially our word against yours, and our word is better. So she'll want to see if you'll go along with a plea for a lesser charge, which the prosecutors will go along with because it saves the government money. Then the problem will be solved. No one will snoop around any further. The NAHL can get back to its very important business of expanding into Asia and Europe, which this little investigation of ours is complicating.
Ortiz was now looking at Sanborn with a pissed-off expression on his face.
I think maybe she already brought up the idea of a plea to him, I said to Van.
Wow, Van said. I think you're right. Even Pedro's public defender didn't open with a plea.
Ortiz turned his attention back to us. I didn't murder Duane. He was my friend.
A friend whose wife you were fucking, Van observed. I'm guessing he wouldn't have thought that was very friendly.
Ortiz put his face in his hands. Sanborn cleared her throat to say something. Ortiz put a hand up to her as if to say, don't you even.
We do have another theory of the crime, I ventured.
And what is that, precisely? Sanborn asked.
One that also hinges on a supplement bag, Van said.
You said the supplement bag was contaminated.
Not the supplement bag, a supplement bag.
The supplement bag that was contaminated was part of a particular shipment, one that was meant for Kim Silva and shipped to Duane Chapman's apartment, I said.
Yes, Ortiz said. I went to the apartment and got the supplements for the game.
Unfortunately, Mr. Ortiz, the box of supplements your bag came from burned up in the fire.
What if there were another bag from that box? Ortiz asked.
Then, depending on what we find, it would go a very long way to clearing you of the murder charge, Van said.
That's good to know, said Ortiz, because I took two bags with me when I left the apartment. The other one's still in Duane's townhouse.
And you can get into Chapman's townhouse?
I still have the door code.
Fine.
Van looked up at the clock on the conference room wall.
It's 12:30. Shane and I have an interview up in Trenton. That's going to take a couple of hours. Let's meet at the townhouse at 4:30. Then you can take us in.
So you're not going to charge me for murder?
That depends on whether those supplements are where you say they are, Mr. Ortiz.
Why Trenton? I asked, as we waited in the car several addresses down from the Chapman townhouse.
I said that an hour ago, and you're asking me about it now?
Van said. She was sipping coffee from behind the wheel. A hand with a cigarette was held outside the driver's side window.
I've been thinking about it since then.
It's close enough to be a plausible trip and far enough away to take a lot of time, that's it.
So, no special memories of Trenton?
Van looked over.
No one has special memories of Trenton, Chris.
I was going to comment on that, but then noticed down the street someone heading up the Chapman steps. The person punched in an access code on the door and then let themselves in.
Jesus!
I really do owe you a dollar, I said to Van. I didn't think they'd actually send someone through the front door.
When we made the bet, I'd put a small camera on the rear entrance and garage of the townhouse, which I had been monitoring. It was picking up nothing but stray cats.
These are arrogant people, Van said. And we said we would be out of town. Why would we lie?
But which arrogant people are they?
Let's go find out, Van said, and got out of the car.
We came up to the townhouse just as the interloper was coming out. They came out looking away from us as they closed the door and didn't see us until they were down the entrance steps entirely. It was Rachel Ramsey of the Philadelphia branch of the FBI clutching a plastic bag. She seemed surprised to see us. "What are you doing here?" she asked stupidly.
"We just got back from Trenton," I said.
"What are you doing here, Ramsey?" Van asked.
Ramsey began, and there was an infinitesimal pause before she continued.
"I was following up on an investigative tip about Marla Chapman's death."
Van nodded at the bag.
"And you put whatever it is in a plastic Wawa bag?" she said. "We're not being exactly rigorous in our chain of evidence, are we, Agent Ramsey?"
"Look, Van," Ramsey began.
"Oh, let's not," Van said, shutting her down. "Here's the deal. You're going to give that bag in your hand to Agent Shane. If it's anything but a bag of IV supplements, then I'll apologize to you and we'll have a big laugh about our misunderstanding. And then you'll give us everything you have on Marla Chapman's death, because as you know, we are the lead investigators, and you really should have told us what you were up to in the first place, and you didn't. Did she, Agent Shane?"
"I don't have anything from her in my mail queue," I said.
"But if it is a bag of IV supplements, Ramsey, and it is, then you're going to tell us everything, starting with who told you to come get the bag."
"Or what?" Ramsey said.
Van rolled her eyes at Ramsey. "Oh, for fuck's sake. What do you want me to say, Ramsey, that I'll shoot you?"
"She might, in fact, shoot you," I said to Ramsey. "But I'm not going to because I don't have time for the paperwork," Van said.
"I don't have time for any of this shit. I don't have time for you. I don't give a shit about you, Ramsey. We spent an entire day working up a chain of people we don't give a shit about so we can get to the ones we do. You're just the next link. But, as I told another one of you earlier today, if you want to make it about you, I'll be happy to give you my undivided attention."
"You might prefer being shot," I said to Ramsey.
"You might," agreed Van. "Ramsey, if you didn't have the IV bag in your hands, you would have passed that bag over to Shane by now. So why don't we stop fucking around and get to it?"
I watched Ramsey through all of this. Her poker face wasn't very good, and Van had been having a day of running over people in order to not give them enough time to think. Ramsey didn't even have a lawyer around to help handle the steamrolling. She knew she had been caught, that her career was about to go up in flames, that she might be headed for prison, and believed Van would cackle while it happened. And Van would, if it came to that. But it didn't have to come to that. It was time for me to play good cop.
"Ramsey, there's a way out of this for you," I said. "Tell us what we want to know, right now, and work with us moving forward. Do that. And if anyone asks, and they will," Van said, "we'll say you've been working with us all this time. Quietly, so you wouldn't spook whoever approached you. Work with us now, and you can still turn this around.
Or don't, and we burn you," Van said. "All the way to the ground."
Ramsey looked at me. "You'll say I was in on it."
"Right from the beginning," I said.
"You're serious about that?"
I almost said pinky swear, but stopped in time.
"Yes, Ramsey, we could use your help, and we could use it right now, before whoever you're breaking the law for realizes you've been found out."
"Yes," Van said, "clock is running."
Ramsey looked at us both, sighed, and handed over the Wawa bag. I opened it. The second bag of supplements was in it.
"Talk," Van said, "fast, to the point."
"I've been on thin ice at work," Ramsey said. "Bad performance reviews. Too many days out because I have to deal with my mother. She has Hayden's related dementia and her care costs are too much, especially now."
"Since Abrams Kettering," I said.
Ramsey nodded and then motioned to me with her head.
"The thing with the threep you borrowed from us was the last straw. It was on me, and that on top of my reviews, well, I'm pretty much screwed."
Then the other night I go home and there's an envelope on the door. Inside is an inactive cryptocurrency card and a note with a phone number. I call the number and a computerized voice picks up. Tells me the card has enough currency on it to pay for my mother's care for 6 months. 1 month was accessible on it already. For the rest of it, I just had to get rid of Dwayne Chapman's IV sample.
"So you did it," I said.
"I was pissed at you anyway," Ramsey admitted. "You were going to get me fired from the agency." She pointed at Van. "And she's the asshole that didn't let me shift the cost of the burned-up threep to D.C. So sure, it wasn't difficult to mess with the sample and make it look like a routine screw-up. I sent evidence of it and then the rest of the card unlocked."
You weren't worried that this was some sort of setup? I asked. Ramsey looked at me with a tired expression on her face.
Agent Shane, I can barely afford my mother's care. Forgive me for not looking this sudden and unexpected gift horse in the mouth.
Van pointed to the current IV bag. And this?
Text on my personal phone less than a half hour ago. Told me what to look for, gave me the door code, promised $250,000 in another cryptocurrency card when I delivered. She shrugged.
What have you done with that first installment of currency? I asked.
Nothing, Ramsey said. No time.
You can't keep it, Van said.
Ramsey gave her a look.
No, of course not.
You're supposed to deliver the IV bag? I asked.
Yes.
When?
I don't know. I need to send a photo showing I have it in my possession, including the barcode, and we'll set up the exchange.
Van and I looked at each other.
And you think this is a wise thing to do, Van said.
I'm not going to meet them in an isolated parking lot at midnight, for Christ's sake, Ramsey said. I may not be a great FBI agent, but I'm not entirely stupid.
We'll make the exchange in broad daylight, somewhere busy.
When are you going to contact them? I asked.
Actually, I should have already sent them a picture of the bag.
Do it, Van said.
90 seconds later. The George Washington statue at Independence Hall, Ramsey said. 1 hour.
I turned to Van.
What do you want me to do? I asked.
She looked me up and down.
Get you a rental threep, she said.
Chapter 20.
The rental threep was a Sebring Warner Palace, one of their more affordable models, and also the only one the rental place on Chestnut Street had in their inventory. I paid an extortionate amount for the last-minute pickup, poured it in, and immediately walked out of the parking garage, heading east toward Independence Hall. I'm in the rental, I said to Van over the internal phone.
Good, she said.
She was at the Hotel Monaco, in the lobby, out of sight. My personal threep was in the car I borrowed from my parents to drive to Philadelphia, in the hotel's valet parking lot. The valet was weirded out by having to drive a threep along with the car, but Van tipped up front.
Are you recording?
I am, I said.
Just as a warning, this rental isn't high-end. I wouldn't count on the recording being crystal clear.
You can see out of it, right? Van said. It'll be fine. Record the handoff and then follow the recipient.
I know my job, I reminded Van.
The asphalt of Chestnut Street gave way to cobblestones, and I walked into the park where they kept the Liberty Bell, across the street from Independence Hall and the statue of George Washington. Both were awash with tourists and school groups being herded by exasperated adults. Occasional threeps dotted the area. I was not notably conspicuous in my rental threep.
I see Ramsey, I said to Van.
She was hovering by the east side of the statue, looking at her phone and trying to act casual.
Anyone coming up to her?
Not yet. There was a tap on my shoulder. I turned and saw three tourists smiling at me.
Yes, I said.
One of them held out her phone to me.
Would you photo?
I looked at the tourists and took a guess at their country of origin.
Would you like me to take a photo of you, or did you want a photo of me? I asked,
and the translation came out in Spanish a fraction of a second later. I took the phone. They were all very impressed with my fake fluency.
A photo of the three of us, please, if you wouldn't mind, in front of the Independence Hall,
the one who handed me the phone said in Spanish.
Sure, I said. Let's go ahead and cross the street for a better shot.
What the hell are you doing? Van said. Her audio channel was still open to me. Blending in, if that's all right with you, I said internally.
You're an idiot.
I've positioned myself for a better view of the exchange, actually. I motioned the three tourists to stand in front of the Washington statue and held up the phone and took several shots with Ramsey also in the frame. The tourists smiled and waved and were oblivious to everything but getting their picture taken, as tourists often are. They thanked me and took their phone back, and positioned themselves on the west side of the statue, and then took selfies with their phones at arm's length. Because of course they did, why wouldn't they? I looked up from them just in time to see a man in a hoodie walk up to Ramsey. He was also carrying a plastic Wawa bag. He held it up to her, swapped out his bag for hers, smiled, and then walked away without a word. Got it on video and following, I said internally to Van. I took a step to follow the man with the bag and almost missed the threep who walked up to Ramsey, pulled a handgun out of its own bag, and shot her directly in the head and then in the chest. Ramsey went down. The tourists at the statue and everyone else started screaming and running. The threep collapsed, inert, gun still in its hand. Whoever had been using it had exited it and left it behind. It was a very expensive act. What just happened? Van asked. I assumed she was looking out of the lobby and seeing people scattering. Ramsey's shot, I said. A threep. I'm coming. Go after the bag. Ramsey's, go after the bag, Chris! I could see the man walking east on Chestnut, turning right on Independence as people ran past him. I also started running toward him. I turned the corner onto Independence and saw the man half a street down, looking back directly at me as he walked. He broke left across the street and started running. I chased after him. The Sebring Warner Palace model is not fast by any stretch of the imagination, but one thing you get used to when you walk around in a threep is navigating through crowds and busy sidewalks, since non-Haydens will literally walk into threeps because they don't see them as quite human. It's not intentional. It's one of those unconscious biases that people don't even know they have. Well, most of the time it's unintentional. Some people are just assholes. The point is that I was not running faster than the man I was following, but I was gaining on him, because I was doing a better job of threading through people as we ran. The dude took a right on Locust, heading toward Washington Square, picking up speed because there were fewer people. As he did, he shook the supplements out of the Wawa bag and then jammed his right hand into his hoodie pocket and pulled out a knife. He was going to tear open the bag and destroy the evidence. By this time, his hoodie had fallen back from his head. His face was mostly away from me, but as he turned slightly, I could see the earpiece lodged into his ear. He leapt onto 6th, avoided the traffic, and headed into Washington Square and tripped over the curb, slamming himself into the sidewalk pavement and sending the IV bag and the knife sprawling. That's convenient, I thought, stepped onto 6th to cross over and immobilize the dude before he could take off again, and then heard the revving of an engine a fraction of a second before a car intentionally and unapologetically ran into my threep, sprawling it in a southward direction on 6th. I picked my head up just in time to see the dude, bleeding, jam himself into the back seat of the car, IV bag in hand. I struggled to get my threep up off the asphalt and got up just in time to stare into the car, which revved up and hit me again. It dragged the threep under its carriage and cracked the head of the threep against the pavement so hard that I could hear the shattering of the headcase a second before I lost connection entirely. The rental threep was comprehensively trashed. I ported myself back into my own threep in the valet parking of the Hotel Monaco, found my way out into the street, and ran toward Independence Hall, which by this time was crawling with park rangers and Philadelphia police. One of the latter went out of his way to intercept me. I flashed my ID onto my chest screen and got through to find Van standing over Ramsey's dead body. She saw me. "Where's the bag?" she asked. "Gone. With the guy who took it." Van nodded and then motioned to Ramsey. This wasn't subtle at all. Murdering an FBI agent right out in the open? They don't want anything leading back to them. I pointed to the bag that Ramsey had traded for. What's in there? A fucking box of donuts, Van said. I don't think the exchange meant anything. I think the Wawa bags were just a way of identifying themselves to each other. There was a commotion and three suits appeared. One of them was Laura Burgess, head of the Bureau's Philadelphia branch. The Philly FBI office was two blocks away. They could have run here, and it looked like they did. The suits flanking Burgess moved to tend to Ramsey. Burgess turned her attention to us. "Agent Van," Burgess said, "you have exactly 10 seconds to tell me what the fuck is going on and why one of my agents is dead." "Agent Ramsey is dead because she took a bribe to destroy evidence in my investigation, and the people who bribed her paid her off with a double tap," Director Burgess. "Bullshit." "Shane?" Van said. "I have her confession recorded, Director Burgess," I said. "Just tell me where you want me to send it." Burgess looked at me, confused, and then I realized the last time she saw me, I was in another threep entirely. She figured it out after a second and turned her attention back to Van, who was ready for her. "So, Director Burgess, your agent went out of her way to fuck up an ongoing investigation, and we both know how you went out of your way just a couple of days ago to run interference for her against us." Burgess stiffened up at that. "Watch yourself, Agent Van." That's funny, Van said. Your agent interferes with our investigation for a bribe. Your lab is sloppy enough to let her fuck up its evidence, and you tried to screw us to cover for your agent's fuck-up, and you're telling me to watch myself. How about this, Burgess? I'm going to give you two choices here. The first is that from here on out, you give me and Shane everything we need to do our job. Top priority, no bullshit. In which case, we all make nice. The second choice is that you don't. In which case, fuck you, and I'm going to make it my mission to make sure at the end of all this, you release a statement about how you have left the Bureau to spend more time with your family. You can count on that. So tell me, Director Burgess, which of these you want? You have exactly 10 seconds.
You wouldn't be able to tell it from my threep, but I was gawking at Van in open admiration. It's one thing to bad cop an electrician or a medical assistant or even an FBI agent. But playing bad cop to an actual director of the Bureau took some chutzpah. And here, Van was doing it, without blinking. It was Burgess who blinked instead. What do you need from me?
I need you to gather Alton Ortiz and Keshia Sanborn for me, right now, and deliver them to the Bureau. We need a room to talk to them in. I need your lab, the one that fucked up, to redeem itself and give us top priority for analysis. She pointed to the threep next to Ramsey. I need everything on this thing and who was piloting it and on the gun it used to kill Ramsey. I need a sandwich because I haven't had lunch yet.
I can do all that, Burgess said.
As in now, Van said. I understand you, Agent Van.
Van turned to me. What do you want for Christmas? She said.
I need to run a license plate and access to all the closed-circuit cameras in the area, I said. I also need to get out an APB on 3 individuals.
Who are they? Burgess asked.
I can give you their images soon. We'll need to run them through the database. I also need a monitor. You can put it in the room you set aside for us. And I, need someone to go get the threep I left on 6th.
Burgess looked at me.
Left?
It got hit, twice. I pointed down Chestnut toward the rental place. And someone's going to need to go explain what happened to that threep.
I assume you're going to try to put the cost of this threep onto our budget, Agent Shane?
I looked at Van, who shrugged.
No, Director Burgess, this one's on me.
You don't seem to have very good luck with threeps, Shane.
You wouldn't be the first to notice that, Director.
Burgess nodded.
I'll give you everything you've asked for and put a priority on it all, Agent Van, Agent Shane. But, Van, a small request.
What is it, Director Burgess?
Try not to be as much of an asshole today to everyone else as you've just been to me. She nodded at Ramsey's body. Everyone in the office lost a colleague today. And whether or not she was indeed taking bribes, the fact of the matter is she was liked by everyone. If you run her down today, there's a very good chance someone will shoot you.
Didn't your parents teach you to look both ways before you walk out into the street? Van asked.
She was watching the video where I got hit by the car and used the conference monitor's remote control to scrub the replay back and forth. She was enjoying the sudden jerk in perspective as my threep went flying.
I don't think looking both ways will matter when a car is specifically aiming at you, I said.
Maybe not, Van allowed.
Before she could continue, Keshia Sanborn and Alton Ortiz were escorted into the conference room by 2 agents. The agents sat them down and left quickly. Keshia Sanborn didn't waste time.
This is outrageous, she said. It will be bad enough for you to haul my client in here, but grabbing me?
Shut up, Van said, and then turned to me. Show them. I popped a video up on the monitor in the conference room. It was of Ramsey handing over the IV bag and then being shot in the head and chest. Ortiz winced at the image. Sanborn looked at it, uncomprehending.
What is this? She asked.
This is a video of an FBI agent being shot to death after she handed off that second IV bag to someone who bribed her to get it, Van said. You know, Ms. Sanborn, the one that stood the best chance of clearing your client of the murder charge we're going to lay at his feet.
Sanborn opened her mouth to say something, then closed it quickly.
Oh, look at that, Van said. It's always nice when a lawyer remembers they might need a lawyer themselves.
What is going on? Ortiz said to me. As near as we can tell, your lawyer has been feeding information about your case to a third party, I said. That third party has been consistently setting you up to be the fall guy for Duane Chapman's murder by tampering with, destroying, or hiding evidence. I scrubbed back in the video to the handoff. Here, for example, that IV bag is gone now. We don't know where it is.
And if we hadn't lied to your lawyer about where we were going to be, we'd all be over at Chapman's townhouse now, looking for it in vain, because we wouldn't know it had been stolen, Van said. We wouldn't be able to find it, and that would make us angry and suspicious at you, Mr. Ortiz. And then you would be in a much worse position, and Ms. Sanborn here would be pushing that plea bargain on you again.
Ortiz turned to Sanborn.
Is any of this true?
He said to her. Alton, look, Sanborn began. Ortiz put his hand up.
You should have said no, he said. That's what you should have said right off. You are so fucking fired.
Van tapped on the conference room glass to get the attention of the agents and signaled for one of them to come back in.
Take her out but keep her around, she said, pointing to Sanborn.
Sanborn left without uttering a word. After Sanborn left, I turned to Ortiz. You're entitled to a lawyer, I said. Ortiz laughed bitterly.
Yeah, because that's been working out so well for me up to this point.
He put his head in his hands and held it there for a couple of minutes. Then he dropped his hands, took a deep breath, and looked at the two of us.
Just ask me your questions. Why did you run from us earlier this week? Van asked.
Because Duane's apartment burned down and I thought you guys knew about my cousin.
You didn't ask your cousin to burn down the apartment, I said.
No, but it burned down anyway.
When I saw you, I panicked. I don't have any excuse.
You knew Duane was having an affair with Kim Silva.
Yes, we were friends. He told me right off.
You were also having an affair with Marla Chapman.
Yes.
Why? Van asked. Ortiz looked at her, confused.
What do you mean, why?
Because I could, I guess. Because Duane was screwing someone else, and I wasn't having sex with anyone, and Marla wanted to, and made the move on me, and I didn't think it mattered.
Did you love Marla Chapman? I asked.
No. It wasn't about that. Marla was angry, and I was horny. I liked Marla. I think she liked me. But I think for her, it was more about getting her own back.
And you were okay with this, Van said.
Agent Van, I'm not proud of the fact I was happy to be getting laid, Ortiz said, but I was.
So you didn't want Duane dead? I asked.
No, of course I didn't.
And Marla never said she wanted him dead either, if that's what you're going to ask next.
So she didn't want him dead, but she did want him divorced, I said, and you were happy to help with that.
Agent Shane, I think I have it on pretty good authority that the marriage wasn't going to last, Ortiz said. I didn't see the harm in helping the two of them get it over with, like ripping off a band-aid.
So you ask your cousin to help you on the same day Duane dies.
I asked Pedro before then. The outage we planned just happened to be on the same day.
It's a hell of a coincidence, Van said. Ortiz held his hands out, pleadingly.
I don't know what to tell you, Agent Van.
How did you get connected with Ms. Sanborn? I asked.
She got hold of me, Ortiz said, told me the league expressed concern about my situation and offered pro bono assistance. I don't have money for lawyers. I was happy to get someone for free.
And what did you tell her? Van asked.
What do you mean, what did I tell her?
I told her everything. I told her about Marla and me. I told her about Duane and Kim Silva. I told her about Duane sneaking Silva's supplements.
But you didn't tell her about the second bag, I said.
It slipped my mind. I told her about the apartment and everything in it. I even told them about the stupid cat.
The cat? I said.
Yeah, a cat, Ortiz said. Silva kept a cat in the apartment. Duane said Silva said she had a surprise for him, and it involved the cat staying alive, so he better treat the cat nicely.
What sort of surprise?
I don't know. I don't think Duane knew either. He knew there was a data vault on the cat's collar, so it was probably something on that, but he never asked what was on it.
And did he treat the cat nicely? Van asked.
Hell, I don't know. He must have, because Silva and he were still doing it. You don't screw around with someone who hates your pets. What happened to the cat, anyway?
It's dead, Van said, glancing over to me.
Someone killed the cat? Jesus Christ.
Silva thinks Dwayne was in love with her, I said to Ortiz. Ortiz shrugged. Maybe? Just maybe? Dwayne liked her, and they had similar, I think tastes is the best way to put it. Dwayne was a little out there. Did you see the threeps he had at the apartment? I nodded. Dwayne used them all. He liked to switch things up, and that's something he couldn't really do with Marla.
Because her plumbing was all permanently one gender, Van said.
Because Marla is very vanilla, Ortiz said. She liked what she liked, and only liked what she liked.
And you were fine with that.
I'm pretty uncomplicated myself.
Dwayne was more complicated, and Silva was happy to be complicated with him.
Is that love?
I don't think so, but Dwayne was good with it.
Do you think Marla Chapman would take a shot at Kim Silva? I asked.
Maybe.
Marla was angry a lot, but she didn't have a gun in the house, and I'm pretty sure she didn't know how to shoot. And she sure as hell wasn't suicidal. I can see her trying to go after Silva, sure, if not to kill her, then to cause her pain, but not the way they said she did. And she wouldn't have killed herself afterward, trust me on that one.
And you covered all of this with Sanborn.
We haven't talked much about Marla's death, but the rest of it, yeah, Ortiz said.
Why wouldn't I? She's my lawyer, was my lawyer.
I thought she was on my side.
Ortiz fell silent and looked at the monitor, where Ramsey was handing off the Wawa bag to the man in a hoodie.
So you're saying this is my fault?
What do you mean? I asked.
Ortiz pointed at Ramsey.
I mean, if I hadn't said anything about the second IV bag in front of Sanborn, this agent would still be alive. That's on me.
Agent Ramsey made her own choices, Van said.
Okay, but one of her choices was to go get that bag. The bag I told you and my lawyer about.
You were played, Mr. Ortiz, Van said. That's all. If you want to feel responsible for what happened because you were duped, that's on you. But maybe don't.
Ortiz nodded at this and then looked back and forth between the both of us.
So what now?
We're not going to hold you if that's what you're asking, I said.
But I think you should stay in our custody for a couple of days.
Because someone might try to kill me like they killed Dwayne and Marla.
I think it would be good to err on the side of caution, I said.
Hell yes it would, Ortiz said, and looked back at the monitor.
So, this guy took the IV bag.
Yes.
So there's no evidence that I didn't kill Dwayne.
We didn't need the bag to prove your innocence, Van said. We needed it to prove someone else's guilt.
But you don't even have that.
Ortiz pointed to the monitor. He's got the bag.
And you don't have him, right?
No, we don't, I said.
So you have nothing.
I turned to Van. Can we show him?
I don't see why not, Van said.
I reached over to Van's satchel on the conference room table, opened it and took something from it, and placed it in front of Ortiz. It was an evidence bag with syringes in it.
What is this? He asked.
Syringe is full of the IV supplement mixture, I said. Before the handoff, we took some out of the bag. It's being processed now.
Because we're not stupid, you see, Van said.
Chapter 21.
Let's run this down quickly, Bridges said to us in the conference room. She pulled out a legal pad. First, the supplement bag you provided contains the pharmaceutical compound that was trademarked under the name Attentex. The lab thanks you, incidentally, for telling them specifically what to look for. It made things go much more quickly.
Delighted to help, Van said.
Burgess looked up at this to judge Van's level of sarcasm, but kept going. Second, the Philadelphia ME also reran blood work to look for Attentex. She did not find it.
Really,
I said.
She did not, Burgess said,
but she said she found compounds that are components of Attentex. Apparently it breaks down over time. She started talking about hydrogen bonds, and I told her I didn't care just to send the full report, which she's going to do in the next few minutes. The short version is, this is as close as you're going to get to that particular smoking gun.
Good enough, I said. What's next?
Burgess flipped the page on her legal pad.
Your license plate was lifted off another car a few days ago, so that's mostly a dead end. except for the fact that a car with that license plate, a different car, was caught blowing through a toll on the Mass Pike last night, Brighton-Cambridge exit. No electronic payment set up, so the plate was photographed to be charged. That would explain Marla Chapman showing up at Kim Silva's place, I said to Van. Could be, Van said. Now, the three men in the car, Burgess continued. These are delightful people, incidentally. Agent Shane, the man you chased through town was Christian Erickson, your basic low-life scrub who has done a little bit of time for all sorts of minor things all around the eastern seaboard. We're working with the Philly police on this one. They have someone parked outside his last known residence. He's not going to show up there, Van said. He's not a rocket scientist. He might. Now, the driver of the vehicle is Terry Abbott. He did time a few years ago for assault and battery, but has kept out of trouble since then. Well, until today anyway. He was a livery driver for a long time, but is recently employed privately as a driver by some company named Levitt Shipping. Anything shady about Levitt? I asked. Not that we can find in the very little time you have given us to look, Burgess said. It's a local company, been around since the 1930s, was acquired by some multinational about 10 years ago. Which one? Burgess flipped to the next page of her legal pad. Reshu Enterprises? I don't know them. They're based out of Singapore, I said. Burgess looked over at me. And you have this information right at your fingertips how, Agent Shane? It's been a long week. I don't doubt that. We also have Philly PD looking for Mr. Abbott. Your third man was a bit of a mystery to us since he had no criminal record to speak of, so he didn't turn up in our databases. But since you stood still long enough to get a non-fuzzy shot of him, Agent Shane, there was a reason I stood in front of a moving car, I said to Van, who shrugged. We went ahead and did an image search of him on the internet, and through the magic of social media, we have one Philip Tucker, originally of Ipswich, England, whose online profiles have him as an executive assistant to a Martin Lau, who is legal counsel for Reshu, I said. I have him as counsel for Levitt Shipping, but yes, Burgess said. Neither Lau nor Tucker are citizens, so when they attempt to leave the country, they will be invited to a chat by our colleagues at Border Control. They're already gone, Van said. It's possible, Burgess agreed, in which case they won't be coming back anytime soon. She set her legal pad down. Now, what does all of this mean to you? It means it's time for you to bring Ms. Sanborn in, Director Burgess. Van, one of my agents died today. I need to know what's going on. Bring in Sanborn, Burgess, Van said, and then stay in the room. Burgess stood up. Fine. Just so you know, Sanborn got herself a lawyer. That's fine, Van said. We like lawyers. Ms. Sanborn has nothing to say to you, Sanborn's lawyer, a particularly unctuous fellow named Dawson Curtis, said. He sat next to his client, who, as promised, was keeping her mouth shut. They were on one side of the conference room table. Van and Burgess and I were on the other. I don't need her to talk, Van said. What I need her and you to do is listen and look. Van shoved the evidence bag of syringes at the two of them. That's the evidence that shows that Ortiz didn't murder Chapman, but that someone else did. We have it, despite your client's attempt to make it disappear. We have warrants for her phones and computers and every single scrap of communication she's had for the last 3 years. Her former client, Alton Ortiz, is working with us and has told us everything he's disclosed to her. He's currently under federal protection, very far away from here, incidentally, I said. Yes, he most certainly is, Van agreed. Because of your client, a federal agent is dead, and we have evidence linking her to the assault of another federal agent, I waved here. Not to mention an entire raft of other charges. Van turned her attention to Sanborn. You were in the room when we read out the charges to your former client. Most of those accrue to you now. Plus others, I volunteered. Oh, so many others, Van said. So no, Sanborn, I don't need you to talk. I don't need you to do anything. We already have you. What we already have you for is enough to keep you locked up until you are roughly older than the fucking moon. I didn't bring you here to talk, Sanborn. I brought you here just so I could have the pleasure of telling you how much I'm looking forward to having you rot away the rest of your goddamned life. Van pushed up from the table and then looked down at Curtis. I'm done with your client. Wait, Sanborn said. No, Van said. You're not talking, Sanborn. Wait, Sanborn said again. It was obvious she was about a minute away from tears. Van waited.
Keshia, Curtis said.
Sanborn held up her hand. Curtis sighed, but kept quiet.
You told Alton that you weren't interested in him, Sanborn said, that you would trade for higher-ups.
We do trade for higher-ups, Van said. But not after an FBI agent has been shot dead in front of Independence Hall, Sanborn. Van pointed at Burgess. Tell Director Burgess here that you deserve leniency after one of her people was assassinated after receiving information you provided. I want to see you actually do it.
Sanborn looked over at Burgess, who was a stone. I didn't know that was the plan.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Van said. Dwayne Chapman's dead. Marla Chapman's dead. Alex Kaufman's dead. Kim Silva was shot through the gut. For Christ's sake, someone tried to murder Silva's cat.
Van sat back down.
All of that happened before you made whatever call you made today. So don't you dare tell me that you thought Agent Ramsey's death wasn't part of the plan.
Sanborn started crying for real.
We all watched her sob for a bit, and then Curtis cleared his throat.
Let's talk about what you want, he said.
Van pointed to Sanborn. This is doing me just fine, Mr. Curtis.
Curtis blinked at this and then turned to me. Agent Shane? We want all of it, I said.
Everything. That covers a lot, Curtis said.
Yes, it does, I said. Your client is going to sit here and tell every little bit of it to the agents here in the Philadelphia office. She's going to tell them, knowing that they know she helped kill their colleague.
And when she's done, what then? Curtis asked.
I looked over to Burgess. Your agent, your call, I said. Burgess stared at Sanborn like she was a bug and did that for close to a full minute.
She gives us everything and everyone, and we'll talk, she finally said.
But let me be very clear, Mr. Curtis, Ms. Sanborn. Someone is going to spend the rest of their life in prison for the death of Agent Ramsey. If your client doesn't want it to be her, then she damn well better convince me it should be someone else. Are we clear?
Curtis nodded.
May I have the room for a few minutes? He asked. I need to confer with my client.
It's nice to know I'm not the only person you've strong-armed today, Burgess said to Van outside the conference room. Van shrugged.
It's my gift, she said.
Interesting way of putting it, Burgess said.
She motioned with her head to Sanborn, who was still crying.
Do you want to leave the interrogation?
Van shook her head.
We have other people to deal with before they can all get their stories straight. I only have one question for her, and then your people can do the rest.
Curtis looked up and motioned us into the room. How do you want to do this? He asked when we were back in.
That's on the director, Van said. What I need to know is this. Who at the League did she give her information to?
No one at the League, Sanborn said.
No one, Van said skeptically.
Sanborn shook her head.
You need to explain this, quick.
I have hundreds of thousands of dollars in school loans. I have credit card debt. My parents are on a fixed income, and my brother and sister don't help them out. I'm junior counsel for the NAHL. They don't pay us all that much. I'm broke, all right? Last year I was approached with a deal. Share confidential details of NAHL business and legal issues when I was asked to, and they'd help.
So they give you money.
Sanborn shook her head. My mom called to tell me my father has started selling driftwood sculptures to a private buyer for a ridiculous amount. Dad uses half of that to pay down my loans because parents can do that tax-free. Nothing comes to me directly, but I get the benefit of it anyway.
Who is the buyer? I asked.
He doesn't know. It's through an art dealer.
Sanborn gave a little laugh.
Dad has been doing driftwood sculptures as a hobby since I was a kid, and now, magically, there's a market. He calls himself the Grandma Moses of driftwood.
Why you? Van asked.
I work in Oliver Medina's office. I see or hear just about everything.
But the League told you to represent Ortiz.
Sanborn shook her head. I suggested it after I was told to.
Medina thought it was a good idea. He's a proponent of pro bono work.
Who told you? Van asked. Who was your contact?
It's mostly through encrypted texts at this point. But the first time I talked to a woman, she said she was representing another interested party. This was when we were in Washington, D.C. We were laying down the initial groundwork for putting a franchise into the city.
You met her while you were doing league business? I asked.
No, at the hotel bar. She bought me a drink and I thought she was trying to pick me up.
Another small laugh.
I mean, I guess she did.
I thought about it for a moment and flipped up a picture on the conference room monitor.
Is this her?
I asked. Sanborn looked and her eyes got wide.
Yes, she said. How did you know?
Van and Burgess turned to look at the image. It was Lena Fowler.
Chapter 22. I hear you destroyed yet another threep, Tony said as I connected to him. Van and I were heading toward Lena Fowler's house as quickly as we possibly could, which in the early evening Washington, D.C. traffic was not nearly fast enough. Van was driving. As she was driving my parents' car, I was nervous about it.
How did you hear about that? I asked.
You have me working with your people here in the FBI office enough that I've had time to develop my own sources, Tony said.
So, is it true?
I did not destroy another threep, I said. A car did.
You got hit by a car.
Twice.
So, once for the experience and twice to be sure? Tony asked.
Hey, weren't you hit by a car when you were a kid?
It was a truck.
Same concept.
Three times is a fetish, Chris, Tony said, which is your business. But it gets pretty pricey. You might want to take up a less expensive hobby, like cocaine.
I'll keep it in mind, I said.
I need something from you, Tony.
Of course you do, he said. It's one of the things I like best about you.
So the IV bag had a Tentex in it.
Of course it did.
But a Tentex isn't effective without corresponding electrical stimulation.
That's what Taylor told us.
So what I need you to do now is to find how to provide that electrical stimulation.
Aside from the obvious answer of however it was that Neuracell did it, I assume.
You are correct. And here's the extra challenge.
I can't wait.
Figure out how it could have been done in a way that would affect Dwayne Chapman and Clemente Salcido and Kim Silva.
Is that all? I thought you were going to ask something hard.
And if you can get the answer to me in the next hour or so, that would be great.
Ah, okay. There it is, Tony said. You know, I'm charging you out the ass for this one.
With the amount of work I give you, I think I should get a volume discount, I said.
Yeah, no, there's that old saying, fast, cheap, and good, you get to pick two. The two you just picked are fast and good. Cheap has just left the building.
Then make it worth my money, Tony.
I always do, he said, and disconnected.
Tony's on it, I said.
I don't know why we don't just hire him at the bureau, Van said.
I asked him about it once. He said he makes more as a consultant, and besides, he's already got the security clearance, so he's got the only cool thing about the gig.
It's not the only cool thing, Van said. You also get to shoot people.
That's not actually all that cool, though, is it? I said.
Blood, death, paperwork.
Van looked over to me. I'm having a long day, Chris. Indulge me.
We turned onto Fowler Street and immediately saw a festival of flashing red and blue lights in front of her house.
Well, fuck me, Van said, and drove up to the barrier set up in the road.
A cop came up and started making rotating motions.
Turn it around, he said.
Van grabbed her wallet and flipped out her badge.
Tell me where to park, she said.
The cop was not impressed.
I told you to turn it around.
And I told you to tell me where to park, Van said.
But if you want to get into a pissing match about it, officer, she read his badge, Wheeler, I'm sure we can find a way to have you be a school safety officer for the rest of your natural life.
Wheeler looked at Van, exasperated.
What are you, an asshole?
Yes, Van said. I am an asshole. Now, tell me where to park.
Wheeler decided Van wasn't worth his time and moved on to the next car he wanted to turn around. Van decided that the car was already in its parking space and got out. "If we get towed, you're paying for it," I said. Van waved me forward to Fowler's house. Inside, Arlington police milled around, trying to look important, but mostly gawking. There was a detective in charge.